Hello, and welcome to Millennial 2017 number. Oh God, I think it's 11. I can't remember now. And this one is with two representatives of the organization Legio Christi. So this is Jaeger and Michael. So hello, Jaeger and Michael.
Hello. Hello.
Hello. So Jaeger, I think we should ask you first about the organization. Can you just describe it for people who've never heard of it before?
Absolutely. Legio Christi is an organization of apostolic Christians. That means mostly Catholics and Orthodox. Some Protestants, as long as they abide by the Apostolic Creed and those kind of things. But really, what we are is an organization that is meant to foster the traditional faith and the traditional values they bring, both locally in the communities that we serve and internationally.
Okay, what are those values?
Those values include bringing the core family back together, enforcing those things that it's Catholic teaching that a man and a woman need to be the center of the marriage, that children are good, that we shouldn't just go away, or we shouldn't replace our children with pets or our jobs or anything like that. Traditional
Or
roles for
immigrants,
women.
presumably.
I'm sorry, say that again.
Oh, it doesn't matter. I was just jesting. So, and traditional roles for women.
Yeah, basically, we're there. The right wing has a lot of political ideas. It has a lot of political goals, but the problem is that they embrace these things online, but then they take no actionable steps to make them happen. People need
That's
to be
a
meeting.
very interesting point because obviously online you get the raw opinions of the public in general, whether it's on Facebook or Twitter and especially YouTube, and also the comment threads under newspaper articles and so on. And there are lots of, I mean, it seems to me that even in Britain, which is often called Cuck Island by Americans, the majority of the public, unless you go to The Guardian or The Independent, if you go into a mainstream publication or a mainstream website or a right-wing website, the majority of the public are essentially conservative and don't like wacky new ideas, are very suspicious of leftist ideas, and also that they're very nostalgic for an age which made more sense, which was more traditional. Because, in spite of all the social change over the last 50 years, people still, whether it's instinctual or whether it's culturally ingrained, they still have this idea of a traditional society, a traditional culture. And so
And
it seems like,
I
as you
totally
say, that,
the
sorry.
oh I'm sorry. I don't mean to
No,
overtalk
no.
the
I was just going to say that I think that the majority of the public basically are conservative, and yet, so they'll rant online, but then, as you say, when it comes to politics, they have no idea what to do. And
Absolutely.
when it comes to society at large, they have no idea what to do. I mean, it's always the lefties who get in charge of this community project or that council funding or whatever it might be, or a school. And so I think conservatives are really on the back foot in this sense.
Well, the problem is that nostalgia that you mentioned, because that nostalgia is those cultures that we remember, those things we look up to, the knight in shining armor. Those were times that were built out of certain socioeconomic situations, certain cultural situations, international situations. We're never going to get back to where we were. So instead, what we need to do is we need to look at the values that they held that created the societies that we enjoyed, hold on to those values and promote them locally if we want a culture like that again.
Well, indeed. And also, I suppose you could mention immigration. You could mention the fact that those societies were comprised of certain peoples, which I don't know if how far you would take that at Legio Christi. But then also, as well as the values, you've got techniques for re-engaging implementing those values. I mean, would you, either of you, like to talk on that?
Well, if you look at Europe and you look at America in general, the immigration groups that we're being pushed towards, it isn't anyone with a sort of similar cultural identity to us. And indeed, that everyone can mostly agree that Europe and America were founded on the principles of Christianity, and so they should be continued through its immigration groups. But we see that groups such as whites in South Africa are completely ignored. In fact, they are rejected. And these are sometimes economic groups, sometimes are refugee groups, because there's a very brutal situation in South Africa right now. But the groups that are being brought in are not similar to us. They're always going to cause a sort of divisive atmosphere. So that's always going to be there. That's going to be, you know, you don't bring them in and have a sort of assimilation process going on.
Absolutely. Well, the problem is not so much their cultures that are coming over. It's they're not assimilating to ours.
And also, we don't have the backbone to make them assimilate to ours.
No.
Of course. Because our culture is currently, you know, one could say it's crumbling. Our culture is crumbling in ways that, yes, there's the nostalgia of it, but as Diego was saying, it isn't held up, you know, on a personal basis. People will say, oh, it was great, you know, back in time, when there was a time when there was large families and, you know, there was these traditional values, but they don't want to do it themselves. As soon as it comes to, you know, there'll be a certain family member they don't like or something like that. And they see it entirely on a personal basis. There's these limiting reasons why I can't do that too. And which I think is a problem with the right now, is it's far too libertarian in its aspects. That
it's individualistic. It's individualistic. This is a big problem, you know, because you can't, this is the thing, you know, no man is an island, and people say, well, if you don't like this thing, then you just don't have to do it. Just don't do it yourself. But that is not an answer, because obviously the whole of society affects you, and especially at the local level, what's going on locally affects you, and the attitudes of people locally affect you. This is something the left understand thoroughly.
Absolutely. That's a sort of aspect of, we shouldn't judge, we shouldn't be judgmental. But why? Why should we not judge? When we are basing society on principles that relay to us that we should judge other individuals on their behaviors.
And that's what scripture says too. I mean, Jesus said that we are to judge righteously. He didn't say, when he said judge not, he meant in this sense of where people are going to end up for eternity. As individuals, we shouldn't be talking about where people are going to end up in eternity, because we don't know what's going on in their head. But we are to judge what is correct behavior, what is proper behavior, and what is right and wrong.
Right, to look after the here and now, the this realm. Sorry, I muted you both there.
No, absolutely. That's exactly what we're supposed to be going after. I can't speak for the entire United States, but I can speak for my family. I can speak for my local parish community. And a lot of these people are really active online, but then they do nothing in their local community. They're not meeting up with their friends. They're not talking with their friends and getting other people in real life involved. And the left, like you mentioned, is doing this in spades. And we can't compete with them because we never have the body mass to put out there, despite the fact that a lot of us are right wing. Even as you suspect,
Yeah, it's more so in America, but I think it's also in a more sort of quiet way in Britain as well. I mean, the Scots, Scotland has a very left-wing political landscape, but I think the Scots themselves are inherently socially conservative. And it's just amazing how time and again that is not articulated at the political level or even at the social level.
Well, that's what happens when you let women in your government.
Well, obviously the first thing that comes to mind when you say that is Margaret Thatcher. She was very socially conservative, but obviously she was an exception. Michael, since you're British, would you like to speak on that?
Well, I think what you mentioned in Scotland in particular with the parties that we vote for, we tend to vote for parties that are they're socialist in economics, but socially they are not conservative. And it really was that Margaret Thatcher era, you know, the shutting down of the mines that destroyed communities, shutting down factories. Yeah.
That has left an incredible scar on the British social landscape, especially in the north of England and especially in Scotland. It's easy to dismiss it as something that happened 30 years ago, but 30 years is enough time for a disease to work its way into the deep fabric of a people, of a local community. Why don't you describe, because I think this is incredibly important, actually, like with something like Rotherham. And I've, I won't go into this too much, but I think with something like Rotherham, that is partly one of the factors that made that possible is that the local community are so demoralized by the lack of industry.
Well, you could mention that they're disconnected from one another because of the parish structure has been destroyed. So the structure of individual parishes, people would meet up on Sunday for mass, they would communicate with one another. If there was a problem in the community, that would spread very fast. If there was some sort of external threat that was preying on the youth, people would know about it very fast. And there was this trust culture. You know, going back to the sort of nostalgia, a lot of the nostalgia people have is from a trust culture that existed due to parish communities. However, they won't trust in parishes today, and they won't see that as the reasoning. And if you know, to go back to Thatcher there, and that destruction of the sort of social structure because of the workers losing their jobs, some of them having to move, communities, entire communities having to move away to different places, they voted for parties that were then socialist, that said the working man should come first. But I believe there's a sort of entryism that came in with that, and indeed with the Labour Party. So the Labour Party represented this working class movement which was socially conservative in its origins, as society was. But the entryism is, they would say, you know, the politicians would get to the higher rungs and they would say, we will give you jobs, we'll give you your sense of community back. What they didn't say, however, is this is your new community. Your new community has completely changed its face.
Are you cutting out for you too?
No, I'm getting Michael nice and clear. It might be your connection.
And
Michael, continue.
Yeah, so the changing face of the community is from this political entryism. It's from people who were voted in, but they weren't originally part of the community to begin with. They weren't originally part of the constituency to begin with. You see what I'm saying here? So they're now representing these constituents. They don't understand specifically what the constituents would want. And that's because they're not
Are you talking about Labour candidates being parachuted into a local community that they know nothing about?
That's right. And I believe that's the case with every party now.
I think so too. I think that what seems to have happened is that sometime in the 80s, or definitely by the end of the 90s, the political parties sort of streamlined and became more what they thought was efficient and corporate in their attitude. And well, this is the result of it. You have what we now call, you know, identikit politicians who just espouse the, exactly the same views. And it even crosses parties. I mean, what really is the difference today between your average Labour politician and your average Tory Conservative politician? There's really not much, because it's become totally homogenized. I think this is also true in America. I mean, really, what's the difference between... This is why Trump was such a difficult prospect for the Republican Party, because he actually is a conservative, whereas they are just, well, Democrats. But I don't want to say too much about that. Jaeger, would you say that's accurate?
I'd say that's accurate, but, I mean, Trump is popular with... He was popular because the person he ran against was so unpopular. Hillary Clinton was corrupt. Everybody knew she was corrupt. Even the Democrats knew she was corrupt. Most of the Democrats didn't even want her. The problem with...
Well, the more idealistic among them wanted Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, yeah. And there was a lot of talk about that. But really, Trump is not a full-on conservative. He's conservative in comparison. But I don't think he's right wing in the sense that most people consider right wing. I think he's very he's right of center, but that's about all.
And even that is considered outrageous today by the mainstream. It really is. It's an amazing situation.
I said that there's a male and a female bathroom, and people start throwing shit at me. So
yeah, well, indeed. So when was the last time, Michael, when was the last time, because I'm not sure how much to concentrate this on America and how much on Britain, but just for the sake of it, Michael, when was the last time you would say Britain had a properly conservative political culture?
I think it's been in decline for quite some time. Politically conservative culture, I would say, up until just after the Second World War, when people, they didn't have the sort of nuclear family let. Now, people look to the nuclear family today as a sort of shining example of conservative values, you know, the mother, the father, and the two children. That is quite a modern thing. A lot of people don't realise that. That is a modern example of a conservative family. But after the Second World War, people were still having large amounts of children. They were still bringing them up in parish communities. And that is dying out because you have these parachuted representatives. And as soon as the parachuted representatives stop representing what you need them for, which is to uphold the society that you have entrusted within them, it then comes down to the people. It comes down to organisations like ours, and it has to come down to people who are not afraid to speak out against other members of their own community for the sake of votes. So if you see someone in your community doing something you know is scandalous, you know, like cheating on the wife, something like that, you should have that courage to go and say to them. Where you don't have a vote at stake here, you have the very fabric of your society at stake.
Yes, it is greater and more meaningful than just your own life and the people immediately involved in it. So let's get to the
oh, sorry. That's the bone I usually have to pick with libertarians, because they're only focused on themselves. They're not focused about the impact that their local, nationwide, and otherwise.
Well, exactly, because they have this bizarre, I think very unrealistic idea that people are all rational, so they might witness something, but they won't be affected by it because they'll be, you know, they're intelligent and rational and reasonable and logical. So they won't just adopt a habit because they see someone else doing it. They'll judge it rationally and weigh it up and then decide whether to, you know, enact it in their own lives or not. But that is not how people are. It's just not. And a habit becomes a culture, and a culture becomes a given. And then that becomes the new baseline.
But those things are the things that destroy the local parish cultures and those things, because it's all radical individualism.
Absolutely. This is what is so annoying. It's so exasperating about libertarians. I understand their, I understand what they're thinking, what they're going for, and why they want it. I just think it's totally unrealistic. Again, it's the cliche about libertarianism. You know, it would work if everyone had an IQ of 140 and everyone were honest with themselves as much as with everyone else. But that's, again, it's just never going to happen. Yeah, I suppose we could breed a population like that, but going by the material of the human race today, it's not going to happen. So I guess that brings us neatly to the organization itself. So, Jaeger, would you like to speak about the history of Legio Christi?
Legio Christi originally formed from REL, which is an offshoot of the, of course, the Chan image boards. It was basically just ship posting and those kind of things, but we realized that there was this general pull, this general need for community among the religious traditional. And we decided to foster that community, and we really built it up around the guys in Australia, who are fantastic. They're really leading the charge on it. When the feminist groups and the homosexual parades go through, they go through and protect some of the churches from vandalism there. That side always tends to do. And we're seeing other groups like them, other of our chapters, protecting the church and church interests.
So that was very surprising. I didn't know that this actually originated on the Chans, on the image boards. That's something else. That's something very new to me, that you'd have a Christian organization, a traditionalist Christian organization that originated on 4chan.
Oh, you just wait. We'll take over poll, probably.
That's amazing. So when did that happen? I mean, when did this sort of take shape?
Organizationally, we really got together, I'd say, about a year ago?
Right, okay. And then from that, it sprung up in Australia. And whereabouts in America?
We're still getting organized in America. I'm here in the upper Midwest, personally. I run the Lupi Ex Maria chapter. But there are plenty of other boards. Do you mind if I plug the website?
Not at all. Please do.
Yeah, legiochristi.com/chapters. There's an email right on the bottom of there. Just email, ask where you can help, and they will find somebody nearby you or in driving distance or travel distance and hook you up with somebody in your local community so you can help both the church locally and internationally.
Right. I guess, would that be like did you say church?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Did you say church? Does it have to be plugged into a local church?
Yeah, to get plugged into a local chapter, you just have to email. I think it's info@radiochristi.com.
Right. Okay, sorry, I misunderstood. Okay, so that's a way for people to contact you, and I hope that people who are interested in this do, because I often get people emailing me, very understandably, asking how can they do something to improve society? How can they play a part? And I think this sounds like if you are Christian, I know a lot of my viewers are and a lot of my viewers are not, but if you are Christian or if you're of that mindset, then I think that this is something you should do, to, if you want to make a change. Because as we were saying earlier, it's very easy for conservatives to just moan and rant and online, but, you know.
I mean, we've, here locally, we've gone through the college towns, posted up flyers, at the very least, gotten the message out into the local community, met together, at the very least, get together, train together, have a few beers.
Okay. Michael, what were you going to say?
Well, it's interesting that there's a sort of a stereotype about Christianity within not only society, but within bold culture as well, that there's this effeminate persona of the Christian, you know. We're really acting to work against that. We don't want the turn the other cheek sort of stereotype that we're just going to take any sort of attack against what we hold precious. Attack against what we've built for ourselves, you know. We've built our churches, we've built the faith from scratch, and we shouldn't have to hide within our own parishes, within our own churches. We shouldn't have to say, I'm a Christian within myself and only within the church. No, we should be a Christian within everywhere we go, which is why, really, we've built this community, because we want people to have that confidence to come and join a local chapter, to come out and even face a local threat. So if maybe there's Antifa, you know, as Diego was saying, they're attacking a church, or not even Antifa, but any sort of group desecrating a statue or anything like that, we have to have that courage and that massive strength to face that. Because
the left do. The left have the strength and the courage and the organization to stand up for what they believe in, including in physical, you know, in meat space, in real life. And the right doesn't as yet.
It's not just that either. There's in the left, you have this system where they're constantly building each other up emotionally, where they're constantly building each other up, if you would, spiritually. And they have this... of course, in Scripture, we're told to do it. As iron sharpens iron, so does one brother sharpen another. And we're supposed to be working in such a capacity that we're building each other up, that after joining, after being a member of an organization, you should be more than what you were previously. You should either be synergistic, or you should be building, you should be built personally.
Yes, indeed. Michael, was there something you were going to say just there?
I was going to note that very fact, that we do build ourselves up in a theological sense. So we do build ourselves up in numbers and in strength, but in mind as well. Obviously, as a Christian movement, we have to look out for one another, and we have to see if, you know, a brother is falling behind in his ways. We act in as the parish would. Now, what we seem to have, we in society, is really an outcast structure. And you said earlier that you were surprised that we came out of, you know, Chan boards. The way I see Chan boards is a sort of, it's a refuge for outcasts in a modern world. And traditional Christians aren't very different in that aspect, that we have been outcasted, even within our own churches to an extent. You take the modern church, and it'll be filled with what we call cafeteria Catholics. And they're really just Catholics who go and they visit church on a Sunday, and they want to feel good about themselves, but they don't want to do anything that's too hard, you know. They don't want to do anything that might make them feel bad, you know, a sort of pat on the back routine. But as traditional Catholics, we don't want to do that. Oh, sorry, Catholics and Orthodox, because we do encompass both. We don't want to do that. We don't want to pat ourselves on the back. We are looking for that traditional way of life, which in many ways isn't represented. So what do you do when it's not represented, even within your own church? You make it yourselves, and here we are.
See, there is an interesting thing here, because people will say, and people do say, and people have said even in the live chat, I just glanced at it Christianity today is effeminate. The overall thing, the overall tenor of the Catholic of the Christian faith today is one of turning the other cheek. Someone said that and pointed out that that was actually from the Bible itself. But there is also another. There is, of course, a completely different side to Christianity of proselytizing and crusading. Well, Jaeger, would you like to say something about this?
Even just basic self-defense. Scripture says that if you aren't looking out for your family, if you're not looking out for your kin, you're worse than an infidel. If you're not immediately protecting those within your life who are your kinfolk, then you're worse than a non-believer. And people kind of forget that. Basic self-defense isn't included in turn the other cheek. Turn the other cheek is a very specific context that has to do with somebody personally attacking you socially. You just it's generally don't be an asshole, right? Somebody calls you a cunt, fucking don't bitch them out back. It's really simple. Now, if somebody goes up and punches your wife or tries raping your daughter or one of the multiple things we see from the immigrants coming in, fucking do something about it.
Yeah, indeed. All right. So where should we... I wanted to ask about the British side of it. So it began in... unless you want to talk more about the Christian basis for this. Either of you want to say more about that?
Sorry, I was imagining violence in my head. Can you repeat the question?
is there anything more that you'd like to say about the Christian thinking behind this? Because
I have an article on Legio Christi which fully explains the Catholic belief behind self-defense and even proactive violence in an effort to stop violence. The title of the article is Theology of Violence. And it's on the legiochristi.com/articles if you want to look that up.
Right. Okay. Michael, you wanted to say something.
Well, it should be noted that, especially as we're talking about Bible context and terminology, obviously coming from scripture, the Bible is horrendously misinterpreted in not only mainstream media, but even in these outcast circles. Just because a quote exists in the scripture doesn't mean it's necessarily within context, or that it's said directly from Christ or an apostle. It could be, you know, from someone like King Herod. It could be something that he said, and it's there, and obviously it's in the Bible, because the Bible is the story of our Lord. So that's going to be there. It's part of the story. It doesn't mean it's to be used in our day-to-day life, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it should also be noted in the context of, you know, effeminate Christianity that it is said... Christ has said to us that he has come not to bring peace, but a sword. And I see a lot of people using that now to combat this sort of effeminate stereotype that peace is not going to be brought upon by humans. Peace is not going to be brought upon this earth with humanity in its state of fallen nature from original sin. We're always going to have warfare. So we are given the weapons of faith to fight that sin. You see what I'm saying here? It's always going to be a constant struggle.
Well, it's against entropy, isn't it? You know, that's the way it seems to me in this day and age, that as the left has, as Christianity has receded and the left has become, the orthodoxy of our time, it's basically corroding everything and breaking everything down, dismantling dissolving all these things. And so you have a nihilistic culture today where the creed really, I mean, the only real credo is just let people do what they want. But of course, that results in a lot of harm and despair as well. Again, I just keep thinking about Rotherham, keep coming back to that as this example of what happens when a society, when a community is not a community anymore. It's just atomized individuals.
Of course. I mean, if you can't even trust your own neighbour to be of good heart, then who can you trust? You know, we have this sort of every man in his own castle mentality where you can't even trust the person who stays next to you. And you can't judge them either. They could be in the house doing whatever they like. And you're not to judge them. But I think...
Well, and also the social expectations. You know, if in the case of something like Rotherham, and again, I use that word, but I mean all of these towns. It's also the fact that you couldn't rely on your neighbour to protect you. You know, assuming that if you're a 13-year-old girl, you can't rely on the people in your community to protect you from gang rape. That's just amazing.
Actually, on that note, I'm a martial arts instructor in the Midwest, and we've done different scenarios and those kind of things. We've done live self-defense on the street, not even close to our building. We had people watch. Now I'm 6'8", right? Which is 2 meters tall in non-freedom units. But I'm 6'8". I'm attacking very diminutive women in the middle of broad daylight. Nobody says anything. Nobody even looks or asks what we're doing. They just see me putting hands on a smaller woman and they just fuck off. And that is consistent for what I've seen. And it's happening here in the States too. People just don't want to get involved with other people's problems.
Well, and there was the thing in Sweden recently where a woman was, I can't remember the exact details, but a lot of people saw her being raped and they actually didn't intervene. I'm not sure, this could be exaggerated by the press and by our own people. I don't know.
That's not exaggerated at all.
It just seems so extreme and incredible that I don't want to take it just on trust as a scares. It might, but I don't know. Maybe it's completely true. Maybe they actually dozens of people saw this happen and literally did nothing. If that's true, it's absolutely amazing.
We tell women in our self-defense class that they should that they shouldn't yell rape, that they shouldn't yell anything like that. They should yell for fire. Because while nobody wants to get involved in a fight, everybody wants to watch something burn.
Right, okay. All right, so let's get to the organization and speak about it in more practical terms about what it does and what it, well, what it does. Jaeger, you start us on that. Right, I mean real sort of day-to-day stuff.
The main purpose is going to be defense of the church and the church interests locally. I know something that I'm dealing with right here is in the north in Wisconsin, they're looking to get rid of Bishop Morlino because he's taken a hard stance against giving final rites and sacraments to openly homosexual non-repentant couples. And would be providing support for him if there are threats that are called in for him and his parishes to make sure that there is security there if it's not provided by the local police forces. It's mostly just the logistics of protecting the church and church interests. I know that in Australia they've had to do physical protection. I know that in France some affiliates of ours have had to actively protect their church and parishioners from the government who wanted to seize their church for their own purposes.
Well, in France, they seem to have a very cavalier attitude towards churches. I've seen there's famous footage of a lovely, like beautiful church being demolished, which I mean, I couldn't believe it because that's something that you just don't expect. especially nowadays. I know that old buildings were demolished in the 60s when that was a craze, but nowadays we seem to have, in Britain, we have a very reverential attitude towards old buildings, especially churches. And yet in France, they seem to be quite happy to demolish them. It's amazing.
That's well, in that particular case. Right, in that particular case.
Michael, you go.
The one in France you're talking about, I know that was to do with the local parish not being able to afford to upkeep that. And really that goes... in France there was this movement to disconnect the church and the state. And so therefore the church exists as its own entity. It's not involved with the state. And if the church can't afford to keep its own churches, from disrepair, then the state can knock them down. But one of the things that we look at as traditionalists is that bringing the church back into the state, so that church and state are connected once again. The church interests can be protected by the government that is supposed to also protect the people as Christian nations.
Yeah. In the British context, well, what would you say about that? Would you say in the British context that there is better protection of these sorts of things than in France?
I wouldn't say there's better protection. I'd say that are better at repurposing churches. Churches are knocked down in Britain because they are presented as useful buildings in the sense that you can then buy them to put a bar in them, or you can buy them to host a gig in them. I know in my own city, in Glasgow in particular, that many churches have went, they couldn't be afforded anymore, so they've now been sold off and now they're gig venues. I'd say that's the only difference between the French and British attitudes in that sense.
It's depressing. So why don't you speak about what Legio Christi is, what the form of it in Scotland, and I know you also in Ireland.
Well, in Britain in particular, as Hugo was saying, this really started as an Australian movement, and we're looking to build chapters up all over. Scotland in particular is a very fresh chapter, it's a very new chapter. So I came to you in hopes that I could spread the reach for the Scottish chapter and indeed for the whole of Legio Christi, that there will be these people who feel as if they're outcasted, and they'll hear this and they'll come and join.
What kind of stuff would that mean? What could somebody do as part of Legio Christi in Scotland?
Well, on a day-to-day basis, there's obviously the physical training. There's the mental training through, we'd recommend theological articles, books, anything like that. We would oppose threats to the church, as you were saying. Things like camping, hiking, charity walks. We as Christians stand on the basis of three principles, which is hope, faith and charity. Now, hope and faith can be rather, you can deal with these things on an individual basis, but charity is something that you need to be involved with a community for. So charity would be things like feeding the homeless or helping the homeless out in general. Helping out Christian charities, helping out old folks' homes, anything like that. Like, you'll be doing good things, you know?
Yeah, I just wanted to step in there. Anyone listening to this who thinks that charity work is beneath them, or they think that it's not actually going to help the community, I'm telling you, you need to get involved. And you need to get involved, A, for religious reasons, because if you attend church at all, you should know what I'm talking about. And B, if you're in the community and people see you as a person who wants to build the community, people on the right wing get the reputation of, well, these jackbooted thugs are going to come in, they're going to destroy the way that we live and everything else. We want to be seen as a group of people that will build the community, not tear it down brick by brick. We're there to help people at the end of the day.
And to have healthier communities that are more functional. Again, this is something... See, there is a helplessness on the right. I think it's a learned helplessness. We've sort of taken for granted, well, the state will probably take care of this, or if not, then somebody else will. There'll be some charity to take care of it. But really, this always revolves around individuals taking the initiative to get involved. So it's not, you know, you can actually make a difference. I mean, this is, I know it sounds cliched, but it's the truth, isn't it?
Absolutely. And really, if you want to know your city or your area really, really quickly, and you want to know all the internal politics of it, spend time with the homeless. I work on a homeless kitchen on the weekends just for the information, because they'll tell you everything that's going on in town.
That's interesting. I just had a look at the chat and somebody says, I don't trust most charities though. And I think that's a very good point.
So what would you say to that? I don't trust local charity. I don't trust pretty much any charities. My advice is to work with a local charity that's at the very most state or region wide. Here in the Midwest, we have St. Vincent de Paul, which is kind of like Goodwill for Catholics, but it's very locally based. All of their profits from their stores end up feeding into their homeless shelters and their programs. It's very, very low cost, low overhead.
And I guess eventually each charity will be sort of judged by the organization, and you will know which ones to recommend to people and which ones to avoid.
Of course, yeah.
Honestly, if we had to look at any of those places organization-wide, they're probably already too large to do a good service in the local community. It should be real, real local. Don't send your charity dollars to somebody in another city who you'll never meet.
And to bring it back to the organization a bit, I just wanted to note some OLO activities. And obviously there is protection of ourselves, but protection of ourselves really implies that we should protect our values too, our Christian values that are ingrained within society. And there's been this slippery slope of every sort of notion that we hold dear as traditional Christians being eroded. So it started with homosexuality, then their right to marry, and then other things like abortion, that sort of thing. And it's about time that we stop just letting it happen. So if you see propaganda that has been put around the place, one thing that we do is we do take down propaganda, like posters, or a Liverpool chapter took down an LGBT flag that was placed on a church flagpole.
Right.
So there's this street activism as well. It's not just a sort of charity movement. No, it's obviously there's charity because you need to protect your community, but you need to be charitable, you also have to be on the offensive as well.
Yeah, proactive and actually making a difference. I mean, this is the thing about the right and about Christianity, especially Catholicism. It's been put on the defensive to such an extent and for such a prolonged time that it's no longer... I think we have to relearn how to be on the offensive.
Of course. And if that means getting our own propaganda out and pasting that over the top of theirs, then we should be proactively doing as they do. I mean, we can learn from our enemy a lot of different things.
Indeed. They've been doing this for decades.
And they have a sort of arrogance about them. They have this arrogance that we are not going to attack back. And if you were to attack back, guarantee you, they would fold. They would fold because they think that they've got easy targets. They think that they've got turn the other cheek Christians, and we're just going to take it. We're going to take, you know, we're having things thrown at us. We're going to take being covered in paint, that kind of thing. But we're here.
And they also think that they've got a socially liberal community, when I think that most people are, as I said before, socially conservative. So they don't I think they don't quite understand that how thin their hold on power is.
Well, really, they represent a very small amount of generations. They represent the mass of millennials and Gen X. And to extend the boomers as well. The boomers are sort of half and half split, the way I understand it. But what they have is crumbling because it doesn't have a sort of basis that can be taken on. What they have is a virtue signalling sort of personality to them, where they just look for the next cause to jump on. So, okay.
Well, yeah. Yeah, this is what we were saying earlier about how Christians have become. But I think it's also true of the left. I mean, the left is, in some senses, it has grown out of Christianity, in the sense that worst part of Christianity, which is the virtue signaler. But that is, as I said earlier, only a part of Christianity. And so you've got this obsession with what other people are doing, but not actually, but in a sense, they don't understand how distant they have become from other people, from the community in general. I don't think they really understand that most people are waiting for an alternative to them. Most people are not just sort of lapping up the drug of liberalism and egalitarianism. Most people are waiting for life to make sense again.
Well, they have this sort of hypocrisy to them where they want to represent the mass of people, but on the other hand, they also want to represent minorities, and not just racial minorities, but they want to represent minority figureheads. So all of these, anything you see as progress within the last 10, well, not 10 years, but several decades, has been seen as a sort of minority at some point, and indeed they are still minorities. The only reason people that would ever think that, for example, homosexuals are not a minority is because it's been so pushed.
Indeed. And there was another thing somebody asked for Jaeger. Does the organization promote Latin language learning?
As the organization overall, encourages anyone who's Catholic to pursue the Latin Mass within their own communities, which of course would also include understanding ecclesiastical Latin. As far as our local chapter, we do encourage Latin, Greek, and Hebrew, Aramaic, any of the languages around the time of Christ.
Right. Okay. All right, well, is there anything else that you'd like to say about the organization before we wrap up?
I think we've covered most things.
Yeah, but no, please contact us at legiochristi.com/chapters. Find somebody in your area. If you don't see anybody in your area, still go ahead and email us. We'll be able to team you up with somebody locally so you can get together as a unit. You can work together, train together, build each other up spiritually and physically, get involved in your communities, and help push them further further over to the correct side, which is the right side.
And as somebody said in the chat earlier, Deus Vult Christianity is best Christianity. All right. Well, okay, we'll leave it there. The website is linked in the description, so please go and take a look. I think this is a a promising organization. At least the potential is there. You can add to it. You can help to build it up, and you can help to make a difference. Because as we were saying earlier, people on the right are too accustomed to just moaning and not actually doing anything. You know, there is a chance here to make a better society. First at the local level, first in your own area, and then more widely, regionally, state, national, and international. So, let's do something. All right. So I'll leave it at that with Jaeger and William from Legio Christi. Thanks to both of you for appearing.
Thank you. God bless.
Okay. All right. Well, the next one will begin in about 50 minutes, and that is with Lauren Rose. So thank you to Legio Christi, and thanks to everyone for listening. And please get involved. See you soon.